Welcome to the iWrite Radio videocast podcast show. Sunday, the last day of January 2021. My name's Stuart Lockhead. The man beside me on the screen is Jimmy Hutton. Hello there, Jimmy.
Morning, Stuart.
We've got one other contributor walking a dog and another one just having a day off. So we'll go with a review of the morning TV shows and probably touch on how we describe it? Dissatisfaction at the leadership of Nicola Sturgeon inside the SNP. And you never know where else we might go after that, Jimmy.
Aye.
Shall we start with Mar then, and who was on it?
Yeah, I don't think it was a particularly impressive show today. You had the Irish Taoiseach on, Rachel Reeves and Liz Truss. Rachel Reeves is in a bit of a struggle. I think I was impressed that they had Anoushka, I forget her second name, on, the lassie that also does the Peston show, because I think her take on UK politics is pretty bang on the money. She does a lot of stats. But
Anoushka. Yeah, I've seen her. So that she was from the Preston. I thought I recognised her.
Yeah, she's as I say, it's a lot of stat-driven stuff with her, but she kind of knows her stuff. They touched on a few things, you know, the vaccine delivery, the vaccine row between the EU and AstraZeneca that actually kind of got out of hand when some did it, the EU Commission threatened to invoke Article 16. For about an hour and a half or so, and then Ursula von der Leyen got involved, slapped them down, and things got back to normal again. I understand why the EU are so annoyed with AstraZeneca to promise 100 million doses and deliver around 25 to 30 million whilst you've got the money sitting in your bank is, well, I wouldn't even call it shoddy business practice. I'd call it dishonest in the extreme. And a major company kind of based in England that's being quite this dishonest, the fact that the Conservatives are willing to just turn a blind eye to that dishonesty and turn this into some daft flag waving exercise speaks volumes about who and what Conservative politicians are.
I think it's worth pointing to the Northern Irish situation, of course. That was the foot shot, temporary foot shot, and no doubt that was why Taoiseach Martin was on, yeah?
Yeah. As I say, I think it was a very naive act by somebody at the EU Commission that lasted about an hour and a half. But it's interesting to note that Boris himself stood in the dispatch box in Parliament and said he would have no hesitation to invoke Article 16 if need be. So to throw our arms up in horror that the EU would consider invoking that same article, a bit of a double standard, is it not?
I watched what Arlene Foster, I looked at Arlene Foster's reaction. I missed the Taoiseach's reaction. Lord Dodds was interviewed by the Belfast Telegraph, and got their angle on it. I didn't hear huge screams from the unionists in Northern Ireland. Yesterday I saw MacDonald from Sinn Féin, and she was very... They weren't on opposite sides. They were just trying to be political after they, you know, commented on the issue. It's not a big issue there.
It's really not, mate. It does show the frailties of the position that we now find ourselves in, where Northern Ireland is effectively still in the EU and the rest of the UK isn't.
I was impressed by Liz Truss. I'll tell you why. Because I I don't like her, I'll be honest. I do not like that woman. But she didn't really put a foot wrong today. And she kept to the script. And the script was quite clearly, we will share our vax. We've got 350 million doses of vaccination, you know, ordered. And we will share with the world.
Yeah.
And it was the same story. She had it on Sky to start with. And then she had it on Mar.
No, I think the simple fact of the matter is we won't need anything like 350 million, so to have ordered them is a great thing. to be able to pass those orders on to other European or other nations around the world is a far better thing, because we won't have to pay the bill.
Well, did you notice she managed to link that to the question about this new trade deal with our friends at the far side of the world? And she managed to link it. That was clever, I thought. Somebody thought that one through.
It was. She'd obviously done her homework before going on the show. That trade deal that, frankly, beggars belief that they're trying to blow whistles and wave flags about it. Because why on earth is the United Kingdom joining a Pacific trade partnership when we are quite so far away from the Pacific? Oh, but that's a question that you're really not meant to ask. You're just meant to swallow the pill full that this wonderful trade deal could in any way offset stepping out of the biggest trading bloc on the planet.
So I'm not sure whether it was Mar or whether it was Sophie Ridge did probe about the value of this trade deal, and the fact that any trade deal with the USA is going to take forever. Liz Truss was pointing to Mexico and Malaysia. She thought, well, I know that Mexico drinks a lot of whiskey. That's about all I know.
Yeah. I think it was Mar that kind of pointed out the stat to her that the entire trade deal that she's doing with the Pacific Trade Partnership is equivalent to the UK trade with Germany. So it's not massive. Germany alone would more than cover it. So, it's just something and nothing, mate. It's Liz Truss trying. She's taken advantage of getting her turn on the telly to position herself for the bun fight that comes when Boris eventually decides he's had enough of being responsible.
You could be right. I was going to say,
I think she'd done well, but it's a very low bar that's set when you're a Conservative going on TV these days.
That's true. There was a seafood business owner who came on and said that he was looking for a lorry driver to drive his prawns to Beijing, make sure they get there in time under this new trade deal. I think he was taking the piss.
I'd imagine he might be a wee bit, mate. I wouldn't imagine you'd get many live prawns by driving to Beijing. You'd have to absolutely boot it, and I think the prawns would be deep. But I was a bit more entertained with the Scottish politics this morning with Gary Robertson when he had he had Alistair Jack making a complete horse's ass of himself and pointing out yet again, as if Scotland needs to, that patrician landowning Tories really don't know what the land is upon which they set their feet. Because he's got no idea. The only thing he can really say, he was busily defending Boris's visit to Scotland. And in a battle, a general goes to the front line. Really?
Really?
I'm pretty sure.
No,
exactly. I'm pretty sure Douglas Haig never went anywhere near the front line 1914 to 1918.
No, they don't go to the front line.
Frankly, Douglas Haig makes Boris look like a bloody... No, Boris makes Douglas Haig look like a master of the art of war. Because Boris coming up here, it was a photo op. It's blown back in his face because nobody wants to be used as a photo op for a bumbling prime minister who's, frankly, the most revealing thing that came out of his entire visit was his hairline, and his hairline receding being the excuse for him wearing his hair quite so unkempt.
I hadn't thought of that. I know it's a pretty obvious one. Yes, Alistair Jack, I think he really didn't improve the Tories' chances at the Holyrood election, even by what he said, let alone having Boris come and visit. I mean, it was essentially it didn't go down well.
I was just going to say, I did notice that he referred to the 2014 white paper. This seems to be because they're tired of getting thrown back in their face. There is no mention of once in a generation in the Edinburgh Agreement. So today he decided to refer to the 2014 white paper. That'd be the white paper that the Tories rejected outright from 2013 when it was published entirely through to now. And yet now they're referring to it. Presumably the phrase once in a generation opportunity appears in said white paper.
You could be right. I was thinking about Gary Robertson's performance, shall we say, and how hard he grilled Alistair Jack. He wasn't particularly hard. He's capable of being a real terrier at times, is Gary Robertson.
Yeah, he attempted to interrupt a couple of times and then let Alistair Jack keep speaking, which he didn't do later in the programme. When he was dealing with the two Labour politicians, he insisted on interrupting them. And you've seen him in the past. God, he's missed an interruption if you get an SNP punter on the BBC.
Oh, God, isn't he half? Well, let's cover the Labour guys. That was painful to watch. Painful because they were only talking to Labour Party members. They were addressing Labour Party members because they're in a competition between themselves to get votes from the Labour Party. So what did we learn? Nothing.
Absolutely nothing, mate. I've got to be honest with you, Stuart. If I had a fiver for every time I heard a Labour politician say, we have to listen to the people, I'd be loaded. I'd never, ever have to work again. Yet again, we need to listen to the people. But not about independence, because the people are wrong on independence and Labour's right. I mean, you've got Monica Lennon pushing some kind of reheated Devo Max, which is actually slightly less popular than Labour themselves in Scotland, which takes some doing. And then you've got Anna Sarwar, who basically is telling the Scottish public, the over half of the Scottish public who want independence, and around 7 in 10 who want a referendum, that they're wrong, he's right, so they have to listen to him. It's ludicrous.
But it's pointless having them on because the public, non-Labour Party members, and that's 97% of the population, I imagine, there was nothing for us.
And we're certainly no interested in what Gary Robertson was trying to get as to whether or not there will be an autonomous Scottish Labour Party, and if either of them want the Scottish Labour Party to be autonomous,
well, exactly.
Nobody cares. There's a reason that they're languishing at 15% in the polls, and that's because nobody gives a damn about Labour Party internal machination.
Well, but I'm going to criticise Gary Robertson.
Aye.
Because he even had time at the end to press the branch manager question. And he had time to sign off. He actually had to pad out his signing off. So he chose not to press. So I have no respect for him at all.
Nah, I mean, as a BBC presenter, BBC has to push Scottish Labour as being relevant. They have to press British unionist parties as being relevant upon the Scottish people. They have to put that forward to us. So...
Well, look,
the entire programme this morning was a nonsense because what's important to the Scottish people right now, regardless of what the BBC thinks is important to the Scottish people right now, what's important is the vaccine rollout, how we're getting on with COVID, how our numbers are coming down, and it's beginning to look like the lockdown is actually having the effect that the SNP government wanted. And most of that really wasn't addressed this morning. Yeah.
But also, Gary Robertson didn't challenge either of them on what they were actually doing, which was they need one of them needs SNP voters in the upcoming May election. That's Monica Lennon. And Anna Sarwar needs Tory voters.
Yeah. And both of them choose to completely disregard
never challenged them. He should have brought it up with his experience. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you had Anna Sarwar desperate to try and link Monica Lennon to Richard Leonard and Richard Leonard's failure over the last 3 years to make any real inroads in the polls, because Sarwar's busily saying, I wasn't involved with these decisions, I wasn't involved with these campaigns.
No, because there's nothing else they could say, was there?
No, but, well... He was a backbencher for one reason and one reason only, mate. He employed somebody at the Daily Record to be his press spokesman. He paid somebody at the Daily Record to undermine Richard Leonard, and he leaked every single bit of information from private Labour Party members so that it was in the press before Richard Leonard could come out and say what any decision had been made.
Sorry.
And that's all to be forgotten by Scottish Labour supporters and Scottish Labour Party members, because Anna Starmer is now presenting himself as the voice of unity and a man who will play a straight bat when it comes to leading the party, having stabbed Leonard in the back for 3 years.
We know who's going to win. It's going to be Anna Starmer. That's bought and paid for. Monica Lennon's just there as a trophy opposition.
Yeah. I think, to be honest with you, mate, they're much of a muchness. They're both centre-right politicians trying to pretend that they are in some way centre-left.
We see any what's the impact going to be once Anna Starmer becomes leader?
I think it'll actually be quite funny, mate, because as much as he's playing a good game at the moment, he's clearly had quite a bit of coaching in media management. Problem he's got is when he stands to make questions, like most of the people in Holyrood, actually, he can't think on his feet. So he's going to be just as bad as Richard Leonard. He's going to have his three scripted questions. And if somebody says something that doesn't apply to the script that he's going to read out, it wouldn't matter. They can't react to it. He'll just read the script out. He'd be showing up as another clown who can't do the job that he's applied for.
Yes, no future for Labour, in spite of Gordon Brown being still all over the place, all over the media. What's the big issue inside the SNP this weekend?
Well, there's an NEC meeting an emergency NEC meeting, by the way, to come up with a definition for transphobia, because that appears to the leader and her supporters to be the biggest thing, that is the biggest problem around the SNP, and we desperately need a definition.
Well,
so that they can then use that definition.
Absolutely. Can I start from the top down? Most people know what the issue is. But what I find interesting at the moment is that even we were afraid to touch the story 3-6 months ago. A lot of people were, because you get cancelled, don't you? What was it called? Cancel culture.
Aye.
Or if you don't get cancel culture, you get a pile on.
You get a pile on, but now you're not allowed to have an opinion about gender recognition and what have you. You're only allowed to go with the orthodoxy, which is, I'm assuming, what they're going to try and impose today.
Yeah, but I think they're too late. They may impose it, but the mood has changed in the country and people are not afraid to speak up anymore. When you look at some of the people that have been speaking up.
Aye, well, there's some loud, continual, what somebody's described as cry bullies, particularly online, who just shout transphobia at anything, even any hint of debate around any gender issues. You can only go with what they see as policy, their opinion is the only one that's allowed to be heard. You're not allowed to divert from that at all. And as I say, I'm assuming that they're going to try and impose that today upon the party. I'm not sure they'll get it through, Stuart, because as it's an emergency NEC, I believe they need a two-thirds majority to get any decision made today. And I don't think
I have no idea.
The NEC's now made up. I don't think anybody can get a two-thirds majority.
Yeah, I have no idea which rules they're going to apply. This is the trouble, of course, but assuming let's say they get through the definition of breaking SNP rules on the issue, mm-hmm. the one that they want, they're then in danger of being sued, apparently. They've been advised by their legal advisor that they could end up costing them a fortune, more money.
Yeah, I was going to say, haven't the SNP spent enough money on legal fees to know that if there is discord, and if there is genuine discussion to be had, imposing anything is the wrong way to go. Sit and have that genuine discussion first.
I don't have to take a position on the rights and wrongs of what's happening with the trans issue. I'd say I've got plenty of friends in the past, people that have been involved in it. However, I can attack these people for what the terrible damage they've done to the SNP, the party, and be very angry with the First Minister. I mean, let's point, here's a quote from Roddy McLeod, Barhead boy. The party, since the halcyon days of 2016, has managed to lose over 40,000 members, and our party leader didn't say a single word. However, this week, six biology deniers left in a huff, and she made a pleading video to bring six cry bullies back into the party. 40,000 diehard independence members have left the party, and Sturgeon said nothing. Yeah, one of our most popular MPs has been under constant abusive attack by these zealots, and not once has Sturgeon condemned it. I mean, she is doing incredible damage to the party, but she thinks she can get away with it because she's so popular in the country.
Yeah. I've said in the past, mate, I think with all that's going on, I still think she'll manage to find a way to wheedle out of it and stay as leader. And that's probably not a bad thing, because with her as leader, we have popularity in the country. She'll win the election big in May. I would suggest, though, that she wouldn't be leader a year from now. I think there'll be, even with a big election win, I think there'll be serious discussions to be had. The fallout from the Salmond affair is more and more stuff leaks out. And frankly, it's having to leak out specifically because Nicola Sturgeon, in my opinion, has directed the Crown Office not to release information that is damaging to her. And the Crown Office is going along with it because it's the only way that the Lord Advocate will keep his job.
And her problem, and there has been enough information released into the public sphere, and enough of the media, important media, has started to believe it, and they seem to think it's in their interests to publicise it. She has lost the media.
Yeah, well, I think, as you say, mate, the more Asmore has come out, the fact of the cover-up, and it does look, hey, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the whole world's wrong. Maybe it isn't a cover-up. But if it smells like a cover-up and looks like a cover-up, I'm going to call it a cover-up. And you and I have both mentioned Gordon Dangerfield not publishing when we expected him to. I think, I don't know for a fact, but I think there are plenty interdicts flying around Edinburgh now. I'd offer there not to be a lockdown so I could sneak into the new club and listen to what the scuttlebutt is round the bar in these big brown Chesterfields, with the legal community sit and discuss, put the world to rights once I've had a brandy and a cigar.
I always think to hear
some of the chit-chat.
I always think of that setting in Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister, where they would go to the equivalent of the new club, these big chests, and these high-wing chairs, and they talk about exactly what's
going on. I think I'm thinking they may now splurge on this at some point, because I think they like to protect their relationships with politicians. They love to keep their sources. So they've let this go because, frankly, some of the people involved right at the very top of this, what I consider a conspiracy, are media sources and have been media sources for a very long time. The selective leaking of certain things to certain newspapers indicates that the relationship between the press and politicians and politicians' assistants is maybe just a bit too close.
I think the choreography, as they talk about in political circles, the choreography, the timing, the leaking, the perfect plan for the unionists would be to release things about 3 weeks before the election. But I think it's going to come out too soon for that plan. I mean, you've got Andrew Neil seems to be very upset, and he's going to reveal things in The Spectator, I think.
Yeah, he's also in a tricky situation, Andrew Neil. He lives in France, but he publishes in London. So he'll have to be very careful what he reveals. The Spectator as a magazine is subject to UK law. However, the Spectator US bloody isn't, and they can publish whatever they damn well like.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I didn't realise that.
They can publish whatever they want over there, mate. The old First Amendment's a perfect protection for Andrew Neil at that point. Somebody's going to blow it apart, mate. There's too much already out there, and at every turn, I mean, you're looking at a situation where a Scottish parliamentary inquiry has had to absolutely twist the arm for the Crown Office to get access to documents that they asked for. Why should they have to be? As I've said before, it looks to me like there's a privacy bill being set up for the First Minister and those close to her at the very top of the party and the very top of her administration. And we don't have a privacy law in Scotland. So why on earth is there some kind of weird... And they're using data protection to hide messages that, well, everybody knows they're there. You know, we know a couple of bloggers who have seen these messages because they've been leaked to them. Alex Salmond tried to introduce them into court and Lady Dorian wouldn't have let them. But The fact that Lady Dorian said, you cannot introduce this evidence, proves that it's there, that they exist.
I think they're deluded, whoever's planning the situation and trying to defend the Murrells, Mr. and Mrs. Murrell, because they've got this idea clearly that she's so popular she could do a Donald Trump and she could run somebody over and kill him in the middle of Sockey Hall Street and they would still vote her into power.
See, I think she's remarkably popular, Stuart, and she will win the election hugely in May. Even if there's a splash over the front of the paper, she'll win the election. The problem is she'll be absolutely hamstrung when she's won the election. But popularity doesn't mean that you're right. You know what I mean?
No, it does not. Well, let's finish with...
Margaret Thatcher was exceptionally popular throughout the 80s, Stuart. Exceptionally. She won three elections, for Christ's sake. Wrong she was on a lot.
First of all, she won a war. That's what gave her the credibility to move forward. I've got a little bit that might annoy our listeners and viewers. Mm-hmm. Little bit of news here. Ken Macquarie, former member of the so-called BBC Scotland Gaelic Mafia, has now been hired by, it would appear he's actually been hired by the, it says here he's left the BBC, but now he's been hired by the BBC. He's been paid £325,000 a year to monitor whether the BBC is biased. My God.
It's a bit much when you're getting a salary that size. And you're an insider of the BBC.
And you're
to advise
deciding
them on
exactly
whether or not they're biased.
I mean, it's a farce, absolute farce. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that thought with everybody, I think.
Well, Stuart, when you think it, mate, that 325 grand could pay for a commission to sit, a group of 10 people, say, to sit for a year and discuss whether or not the BBC is biased. Wouldn't it take a year? It'd take you 6 weeks. An in-depth expose of their news coverage, their investigative coverage. And I would suggest any 10 people from any communities, from various communities around the country, get them together and you get a far more nuanced and actually clear picture of whether or not the BBC is biased.
It's a whitewash. And they're paying £325,000 a year for a whitewash. That's awful.
But it's Ken Macquarie, mate. Is it not a tartan wash?
Okay. There's no such thing as tartan paint.
Aye. That's how it's costing 325 grand. Somebody's developing the tartan paint to see it.
Well, Jim, I think we'll wind it up with that one. Thank you very much for all your observations, as astute as ever. And my name's Stuart Lockhead. It's been Jim Hutton. And this has been the iWrite Radio Videocast Podcast Show. And thank you very much for being with us. I've just got to find the right button, guys. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Bye-bye.